Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Mexican President Obrador has asked the Vatican and Spain to apologize for the conquest of Central America 500 years ago. The EU Parliament voted overwhelmingly to ban the sale of single-use plastics from 2021. A rocket fired from Gaza hit a house in Israel and set off intense bombing of Gaza. Trump reversed decades of policy by officially recognizing the Golan Heights as Israeli territory during a Washington visit by Netanyahu, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Mexican President Andres Manuel López Obrador has urged the Vatican and Spain to apologize for the conquest of Central America's indigenous peoples 500 years ago. Standing with his wife in front of a Maya ruin, Obrador said he hoped the request would prompt an historical reconciliation.
We're turning now to Europe's plastic purge. No more straws, no more single-use plastic cutlery, no more cotton butts. The European Parliament voted overwhelmingly today to ban these kinds of plastics, which pollute oceans and beaches. Experts say the move is long overdue.
Disposable plastic was long thought of as extremely practical. On a picnic, for example, you could use your plastic cutlery once, then simply throw it away. But there are more environmentally friendly alternatives, such as paper straws. They decompose quickly and don't endanger marine animals such as turtles. Pollution by plastic straws has been known to kill some sea life. 85% of the trash in the ocean is made of plastic, and most of it is disposable items. Experts fear that by 2050 there will be more plastic in our oceans than fish. In an attempt to at least slow that down, the European Parliament voted by a large majority on Wednesday to ban single-use plastics from 2021.
If we don't change our ways now, we will choke our oceans with plastic. Scientific evidence is undeniable. So are the gravity and urgency of the problem. Europeans care about this and want Europe to show leadership in finding solutions and raising the standards across the globe.
The manufacturers of all products will have to be involved in waste disposal. The EU wants to cut the overall cost of environmental damage by 22 billion euros in the next few years.
Israel says it's intercepted dozens of rockets fired from Hamas-controlled Gaza, bombing targets in response. This latest violence comes after a surprise rocket fired from Gaza hit a house near Tel Aviv, and despite an announcement by Hamas on Monday night of a ceasefire brokered by Israel.
The ceasefire appeared to collapse almost as soon as it was brokered. Israel said its Iron Dome rocket defense system intercepted several launches, with most others falling into open fields. Earlier in the evening, a rocket aimed at the border town of Sderot got through defenses and destroyed a home. No casualties were reported. The tit-for-tat attacks were triggered by a rocket that obliterated a residential home outside Tel Aviv in the early hours of Monday. Israel said that rocket was launched by Hamas, the militant group that rules Gaza. The home's residents were awoken by air raid sirens and managed to flee before the rocket crashed through the roof and exploded. By nightfall, the Israel Defense Forces were retaliating with rocket attacks, striking targets in Gaza. Hideouts, they say, of Hamas militants. The ceasefire, reportedly brokered by Egypt and accepted by Hamas late on Monday, was never confirmed by Israeli officials. The rocket attacks through the night show that if it ever really existed, the ceasefire is at best shaky, and at worst, over before it even took hold.
In the region, the cross-border violence comes as the United States reverses decades of policy in the Middle East by officially recognizing the Golan Heights as Israeli territory. U.S. President Donald Trump trailed the decision on Twitter last week, and during a visit by Israel's Premier Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington, Trump signed a proclamation calling for recognition of Israel's sovereignty over the territory. Israel seized the Golan Heights from Syria in the Arab-Israeli War in 1967 and then annexed the Golan Heights in 1981. But that move has not been recognized by any other country until now. Our correspondent in Washington, Helen Humphrey, has been following events for us. She sent us this assessment.
The United States and Israel have long held a special relationship, but that bond grew stronger on Monday at the White House. U.S. President Donald Trump referred to the Israeli Prime Minister using his nickname, calling him Bibi, and Netanyahu responded, calling the U.S. President, dear friend, Donald. And indeed, Netanyahu was granted a gift from his dear friend, who signed a proclamation to recognize the disputed Golan Heights as part of Israel. Now, that undid decades of U.S. foreign policy. The Golan Heights are of strategic importance. They were captured by Israel in the Middle East War in 1967 and then annexed by Israel in 1981 in a move which was not recognized internationally. But now it seems that Israel has the United States on board, as it does on a number of other key issues. Under the presidency of Donald Trump, the United States has recognized Jerusalem as the country's capital. It has halted aid to Palestine, and it has exited the Iran nuclear deal. Now it seems that the United States has granted Netanyahu another key victory as he returns home to face the final days of his battle for re-election.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, NHK Japan. The U.S. was isolated at an emergency UN Security Council meeting as all other countries criticized the new U.S. policy on the Golan Heights. The Chinese President Xi Jinping met with European leaders to address global warming, reforming the World Trade Organization, and to promote a fairer multilateral trade framework. The Taiwanese President has asked the U.S. for arms sales, specifically F-16 fighter jets, to counter mainland China. The Islamic State Militant Group, IS, has claimed responsibility for an attack in northern Syria. NHK Japan.
The United States was isolated at a UN Security Council meeting on Wednesday as other countries criticized its decision to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. The emergency meeting of the Security Council was convened at Syria's request. U.S. President Donald Trump signed a decree on Monday recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the plateau that Israel seized from Syria in the 1967 Middle East War. The U.S. representative told the meeting that the presence of Syrian troops in the area of separation between Syria and Israel violates a ceasefire agreement. He said the U.S. decision was a measure to protect Israel's right to defend itself. But most other Security Council members, including the United Kingdom and Russia, criticized the U.S. decision. They said the unilateral move by the U.S. violates international law and Security Council resolutions that Washington has previously supported. The Emergency Council meeting was limited to discussions because the U.S., as a permanent member, has veto power.
Chinese President Xi Jinping and European leaders have agreed to work together to address global issues. Xi met Tuesday with French President Emmanuel Macron, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Paris. They held a joint news conference and said they'd agree to cooperate more closely to face the challenges of tackling global warming, reforming the World Trade Organization, and other issues. Macron said he wants to create a fairer, more balanced multilateral framework with the other leaders. Xi said China will improve access to its markets to meet the demand from a new era. He also said he supports efforts to reform the WTO to help make the global economy more open and protect a multilateral trade framework. The leaders reaffirmed the importance of international cooperation at a time when European nations have become increasingly wary of China's rising profile on the global stage. Their pledge to seek fairer trade rules is seen as an implicit warning to U.S. President Donald Trump's protectionist policies.
Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen has asked the United States for arms sales to counter military pressure from China. Tsai visited Hawaii on Wednesday, where she took part via internet video link in an event hosted by the conservative think tank Heritage Foundation in Washington. Tsai accused China of heightening military tension, limiting Taiwan's international activities, and using every opportunity to change the status quo. Chinese President Xi Jinping maintains that the one country, two systems approach would be best for integrating Taiwan. Tsai has rejected the idea, saying that developments in Hong Kong show one country, two systems will just become one country. She stressed the need for cooperation from the U.S. administration of President Trump through the sales of F-16 fighter jets to Taiwan.
The Islamic State militant group has claimed responsibility for an attack at a checkpoint in northern Syria on Tuesday. Seven fighters from Kurdish-led forces were killed. The U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces say the attack took place in the town of Manbij. The troops control the area. In January, more than 10 people were killed in an apparent suicide bomb attack in the same city. Victims included four U.S. military personnel. The Syrian Democratic Forces announced last week that the eastern village of Baghouz was freed, declaring the total elimination of the militant group's stronghold. U.S. President Donald Trump also said that Islamic State militants no longer control any territory in Syria. But the attack on Tuesday indicates that remnants of the Islamic State group are still active in the country.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6155-7410 or 9860, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. In Brazil, the defense of imprisoned former President Lula da Silva asked the Superior Court of Justice to annul his prison sentence. The Venezuelan government rejects the unilateral sanctions announced by Donald Trump to immobilize the sovereign nation. On Monday, a second attack on the electrical system in Venezuela was perpetrated by right-wing forces, according to the government. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The defense for former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva asked the Superior Court of Justice, the STJ, for the annulment of the sentence in the case known as Triple X of Guarujá. In July 2017, former judge Sergio Moro, current Minister of Justice, sentenced Lula to 9 years and 6 months in prison for allegedly receiving a luxury three-level apartment in Guarujá, São Paulo State, in exchange for the promotion of interests of the OAS company together with Petrobras. According to the indictment, as the person responsible for appointing Petrobras' senior management, the former Workers' Party leader had a notable role in the criminal scheme of the so-called Lava Jato operation. This network of corruption allowed large national companies to agree to share the multi-billion dollar contracts of Petrobras by bribing politicians and employees of the state company. In January 2018, Lula was sentenced by the Federal Regional Court, the TRF, of the 4th Region, based in Porto Alegre, to 12 years and 1 month in prison for corruption and money laundering. By Moro's determination, the former governor has served his sentence since April the 7th at a federal police facility in Curitiba, capital of the southern state of Paraná. The Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela strongly rejects the unilateral, coercive, arbitrary, and illegal measures announced by U.S. President Donald Trump to immobilize the South American country. These measures, the Venezuelan government stated in a press release, serve to, quote, directly attack the heart of the finances of the Venezuelan people and in so doing, quote, demonstrates U.S. hypocrisy. The U.S. president, days earlier, issued threats to impose sanctions on the Banco de Desarrollo Económico y Social de Venezuela, BANDES, and its subsidiaries located in neighboring countries, namely Banco Prodem in Bolivia and Banco BANDES in Uruguay. The new sanctions on the financial sector intend to block the implementation of social and productive plans promoted by the public and private economic agents of Venezuela. The government said that, amid the new sanctions, quote, the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela will remain firm in the defense of their independence and political, economic, and cultural sovereignty. The statement further noted that the United States continues to purport proven disingenuous offers of humanitarian aid while attacking the sources of generations of Venezuelan resources. Venezuela points out that the sanctions will affect more than 23 million individuals and public and private companies with the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, including two main commercial banks, Banco de Venezuela and Banco Bicentenario del Pueblo. The U.S. government previously launched an attack on the resources of Venezuela through direct sanctions levied against Petroleros de Venezuela S.A., PDVSA. In addition to BANDES, the Trump administration now vows to cripple other, quote, important Venezuelan financial institutions with an aim to curtail the Bolivarian Republic's right to its integral development and to the sustainability of its national and international financial system. A new attack on Venezuela's national electric system, which left many sectors of the country without power, was denounced Monday by Vice President of Communications, Tourism and Culture, Jorge Rodriguez. We have experienced a new attack on the transmission and charging center of the national electric system, aimed to take out the machines of the Simón Bolívar hydroelectric power plant located in Guri, explained Rodriguez. This new aggression took place almost 20 days after a major cyber attack on the country's electrical system resulted in a six-day nationwide blackout, which, according to the national government, was executed by the United States. However, this time, as Venezuela's officials stated, all the countermeasure mechanisms implemented by President Nicolas Maduro performed flawlessly. These worked for the insurance, maintenance, and communications between the different stations, which allowed that in record time almost all the service throughout the country was restored. Some parts of Caracas and the metro system in the city are still without service. The metro system reported via Twitter that it activated a contingency plan for alternate routes through the metro bus. Although the attack had similar characteristics to the March 7 event, we had the capacity to respond quickly, and the service has been restored in almost all the national territory, and in the next few hours, all the country will have electricity back on, assured Rodriguez. The high-ranking official added that the Venezuelan far-right's intention does not pursue any political or ideological basis. The real intention is to attack, generate anxiety, plunge the population into a situation of deep distress, to be able to seize power and achieve what they have already done, which is to steal all the resources that belong to Venezuelans, concluded Rodriguez.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, but their podcast links still don't work. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6060, 6000, and possibly 9535. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. The only funding this program receives is from donations. Please help me continue this show if you can. We will conclude with Russia's Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi interviewed WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Kristen Hrafnsson. They discussed accusations that WikiLeaks disseminated materials from a Russian government hacking program, the lawsuit by the Democratic National Congress, the current dark period in mainstream media, and government attacks on Chelsea Manning. Sputnik Radio.
WikiLeaks. And in the past 72 hours, U.S. President Donald Trump's U.S. Attorney General William Barr has submitted to Congress conclusions reached by special counsel Robert Mueller that directly attack the whistleblower organization. Joining me now is the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, Christian Hrafnsson. Well, we now know the U.S. Attorney General from him that your organization, quotes, publicly disseminated materials from, obviously, the Russian government hacking operations, quote, through various intermediaries, including WikiLeaks. Do you deny that?
Well, I mean, we've seen this claim before that WikiLeaks knowingly was cooperating with Russian agents in publishing the information from the Democratic Party in 2016. That claim is false, and there is nothing to substantiate that claim, and that hasn't changed.
Well, something must substantiate it, presumably, if the U.S. Attorney General is summarizing the conclusions of a report that's taken more than 2 years, is it, by the special counsel, Robert Mueller?
Well, there's a very, very, very interesting wording in the that you cited earlier. I mean, A, it is said that this is a material that Russian agents obtained through hacking or other means, and B, that it was disseminated through various intermediaries, including WikiLeaks. I have not seen any evidence substantiating the first half of the claim. WikiLeaks is an organization that publishes information that it receives. If it's verifiable, if it's accurate, and if it's newsworthy, it is published, just like every journalist should do. Now, the second half of that sentence that you were citing is that it was disseminating through intermediaries, various intermediaries, including WikiLeaks. That's actually a rather positive acknowledgement that there were dozens of media organizations that were disseminating exactly the same information. But why singling out and mentioning WikiLeaks? If you go into details on that, I can name those organizations, the media organizations that were doing exactly the same thing as WikiLeaks, and should be mentioned there as well. I mean, the Guccifer 2.0 leaks, the alleged leak from that entity, was published by at least 11 media organizations, including the Washington Post. Information that was said to be from DC leaks was published by 17 media organizations, including the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journals, etc., etc. And the material that WikiLeaks published was republished and stories written on it in 23 media organizations, including all the major media organizations in the Western world, and the BBC, and the NBC, and the ABC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, etc., etc. Why single out WikiLeaks? I don't understand that.
Your own former media partners, the London Guardian, called your organization basically useful idiots for Russia. You are being taken to court by the Democratic National Congress, whose most prominent arguable 2020 candidate is Bernie Sanders, despite your leaks, of course, contributing to our knowledge about how the Clinton campaign in 2016 tried to destroy the Sanders presidential campaign in 2016. What are you going to do about the DNC suing you?
Well, I mean, we are defending ourselves. The organization has put up a defense, and it will be met in court and dealt with. That's the only thing to do.
But they're not suing the BBC or ABC or the New York Times. Who?
Not at all. Not at all. They're not suing the mainstream media on their home turf who were disseminating exactly the same information, as is now acknowledged in the Attorney General's letter based on the Mueller report.
Would you still say that in the whole situation here, this has been a victory for anyone who wanted strained relations between Moscow and Washington? Russia says there's nothing to celebrate because sanctions and economic warfare continue out of all of this, even though it may be a complex labyrinthine connection to WikiLeaks and the DNC server.
I mean, who gained for this? I mean, this is a journey that was started in a panic reaction. We have confirmation that within 24 hours after the outcome of the election in 2016, the Democratic Party officials decided that they had to put a blame somewhere because it was a humiliating defeat against Donald Trump. And Russia became the entity that everything should be blamed on. And on that basis, we've had this frenzy in the media, an absolutely a neo-McCarthyistic era, which is total humiliation for journalism. Who has gained? I can tell you who has lost. Journalism in general has lost. This is an extremely dark period for mainstream media, especially in the United States, and for those who cater to that market, such as The Guardian. It is much worse than the episode with the mainstream media swallowing the story of the alleged weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is even worse than the McCarthyist era in the 50s. It is such a humiliation, such a blow to journalists. I have no idea how the mainstream media, who were most active in this Russiagate frenzy, will recover. I simply don't see that happening. In a normal world, a lot of journalists would be emptying their desks today and just quietly vanish off the scene. This is a horrible, horrible dark days for journalism in our country, in my profession, in our world. And I don't have any schadenfreude feeling on that. It's a sorry state.
The whistleblower, Chelsea Manning. Donald Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, called for her killing. She's already been tortured. Do you think the Trump administration will try to kill her?
She spent now 2 weeks in solitary confinement, which is an absolutely a horrible thing. We are seeing something happening that you do not expect to see in a country that calls itself civilized. I mean, for heaven's sake, this is something you should see in an authoritarian regime. She was court-martialed. She was sentenced. She spent 7 years in prison. Her sentence was commuted by a presidential decree, and now she is hauled back in front of a secret court, a secret grand jury, and in an attempt to force her, an alleged source, to testify against the journalist who worked on the material. This is absolutely unacceptable. And if the media in the U.S. had if they want actually to regain some of the trust that they have lost, the entire trust, they should now start focusing on the situation of Chelsea Manning and the atrocity that she is facing now. We also know that several individuals that had even minor connection to WikiLeaks back in 2010 are now being sent what I call the Don Corleone offer, which is the mafia style offer that they can have immunity if they testify against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. This is an outrageous thing. This is a threat to individuals, U.S. citizens, who are now basically living in exile as refugees in several European countries. So the signals are there that this might be approaching an even more serious situation. We, of course, know that Lenny Moreno in Ecuador is willing to sacrifice Julian Assange even for debt relief. That was reported in the New York Times in early December.
Christian Hrafnsson, thank you.
That interview is by Afshin Ratansi on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, though interference from electronic devices has made it much more difficult. If you use the internet, listening globally is easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 22nd year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.